You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Welcome to the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. This program is streaming live from the studios of 3CR in Melbourne. The program is podcast, so if nature calls, or somebody knocks on your door and drags you away because you're an extremist, don't despair. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. There are hundreds of podcasts of the anarchist world this week. And you know what anarchism is all about? No, it's not about the state of the world today. Anarchism is a much more sophisticated philosophy. Anarchism, anarchos without rulers. It's about creating a society without rulers. What causes most of the problems in the world today? Inequalities in power and wealth. What gives rulers the ability to determine the lives of billions of people, blow them to bits when they feel like it? Inequalities in power. Inequalities in wealth. So the anarchist struggle is the struggle to devolve power, that's share power, possibly through direct democratic means, and the struggle to hold wealth in common and use it for the common good. Motherhood statements, but important statements. Whether you or I ever find ourselves living in an anarchist community or society is irrelevant. What's relevant is the struggle to create that society. It's not about, you know, you pay your two pennies and you get, you know, you get your waffle stick. It's not like that. It's about constant discussion, pressure, activities, changing mindsets. Because it's about time we stop relying on rulers, whether they're religiously inclined, whether they're secular, and we began to rely on us. All right, let's move on. Now, I've been tossing and turning last night. Not that you'd care, and why should you? Because obviously you'd be tossing and turning most likely. But I was thinking about Australian values. Australian values. We hear prime ministers and ministers of the cabinet and media personalities and, you know, the helmsmen and helmswomen of business talking about Australian values. And there I was at 3 o'clock in the morning thinking, what is an Australian value? What makes our values as a sovereign nation state different to anybody else's values? Why? What is it all about? Charlie, as they say, what's it all about? So what's an Australian value? Now, the first of all, you know, people's desire to live in peace, get on with their lives, do the best they can for their family and friends and the people around them, I think is universal. That's not an Australian value. And then we talk about when we all come together after a natural disaster. Now, that's a universal value. That's not an Australian value. All right? It's universal. And then people talk about the fact that we are a democratic society. And we're told that's an Australian value. It kind of sets us apart from everybody else. And regular listeners to the program will know that, you know, parliamentary democracy is really the mitochondrial stage of, democracy. What I mean by that is having elections to select people to represent you who've got no intention to actually carry out their promises is not democracy. I mean, we talk about direct democracy, where the people involved in the decision make that decision and then elect or appoint delegates to coordinate those decisions at a local, national, possibly international level. So is parliamentary democracy an Australian value? Well, it's not. Parliamentary democracy, we see it around the world. They even have parliamentary democracy in Russia, right? So, what's an Australian value? Is an Australian value our ability to enter negotiations to enter into a national treaty with this country's First Nations people. Now, when you think, it wasn't until 1992 that the High Court of Australia found in the Mabo decision on the 3rd of June that First Nations people had rights to land in this country because of their prior occupation of this land. And the lie that this land was not inhabited, terra nullius, which was incorporated in our legal structures, was that an Australian value? And considering the loss of the recent referendum regarding, some regarding people's, First Nations people ability to be incorporated in the Constitution, offer a little bit of advice to the government of the day. Well, maybe an Australian value is to continue to ignore and deny our history and the ongoing negative impact it has on First Nations people. Maybe that's an Australian value, We ignore things. Now, I think an Australian value is the fact that we think history began when we woke up this morning. Now, that's a great Australian value. Because if you ask most people today why they've got, if they're working, if they're wage slaves, why they've got holiday pay, sick pay, parental leave, you name it, most people shrug their shoulders. Somehow thinking these wonderful, wonderful, wonderful rights were showered on us by some pantheon of gods out there. Well, obviously, you and I are well aware of the struggles that were involved in creating a trade union movement, which was fundamentally and instrumentally involved in that struggle to ensure that a few more crumbs were brushed off the corporate table in our direction. But it seems as if people seem to have forgotten that somehow most of the things we enjoy, including universal health care, the pharmaceutical benefit scheme, national disability insurance scheme, all came from generations of people struggling to ensure that governments, which we theoretically elect every 3 years, put our interests before the interests of that small section of society that owns the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication. So I think it is an Australian value that we think that history began today. And the great thing about thinking that history began today is that it's a new slate. Nothing that's happened in the past is relevant. And no wonder we find ourselves in such a difficult, many of us find ourselves in such a difficult situation in 2025. Now, another great Australian value was that we were an egalitarian community. Now, look, I know it's the end of the first quarter of the 21st century and that facts and figures are irrelevant. We just create things, You just create things. I'm God, You just create it. I'm the ruler of the universe, I'm all powerful, all knowing. We just create things out of thin air. Climate change doesn't exist. Well, and the reality is that the facts and figures regarding income distribution and accumulation of wealth in this country have gone the other way in the last 50 years. Although there was a significant working people's struggles to redistribute wealth during the first half of the 20th century and even the first 70 years of the 20th century, over the last 50 years, we've seen things go backwards. And anybody who thinks that Australia is an egalitarian community and that's one of our values, that everybody should have a fair go, mate. It's a good election campaign slogan, isn't it? Fair go to all Australians. Well, it's a little bit like a 100-metre race. Australian society was never egalitarian. Doesn't look like it'll ever be egalitarian if we continue along the same pathway. It's a little bit like a 100-metre race, as I said before. You've got some people that start on the starting line. You've got some people that start 100 metres behind the start of the race, and you've got some people that are 5 metres away, start 5 metres away from the finish line. You shoot the gun and off they go. And obviously, the people who have access to Power and Wealth and their descendants and their friends are on the 5 metre starting line, you know, the 95 metre starting line. While the one third of Australians who rely on social security benefits to survive, and the bulk of Australians who, you know, spend most of their income paying for essential services, well, they find themselves either at the starting line if they're tradespeople or if they got a, you know, secure job, or they find themselves right back 100 metres away. So, Australia's an egalitarian community? I'm afraid not. Then we're told, and this is the part I love, then we're told that we, that's right, you and me, live in a free society. Okay? That we have freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of association, the right to withdraw our labour. Now, what planet have I been living on in the last 30 or 40 years? Now, obviously, there's there is no freedom of speech as a right. Obviously, while you and I are, you know, basically impotent in terms of our influence in society as a whole, we have this thing called freedom of speech, but actually there is no freedom of speech as far as the Constitution is concerned. Now, if somehow I was a little bit more persuasive or had a bit more influence than I do on the anarchist world this week, I can assure you this program would have been closed down years ago. I mean, freedom of speech is an illusory concept, especially when there are no constitutional provisions for it. Freedom of association, freedom, it doesn't exist. The Attorney General can ban any organisation they like at any time because they're seen as a perceived threat to Australia. To the Commonwealth, I should say. To the Commonwealth of Australia. Let's get this correct. And the list goes on and on. So, Australian values. Look, I'm looking for this elusive little thing. I'm looking for it. I'd love to grab it and rub it against my body so I could feel to be a real Australian who had real values. Well, isn't Australia, maybe an Australian value is to, you know, beat the drums of war. Seems to be something we're doing lately, isn't it? I mean, obviously, you, that's right, you're willing to sacrifice your children and your grandchildren for your country. Unfortunately, it's not our country. It's not even the country of this country, the First Nations people who've been, you know, removed from the equation. This country doesn't belong to you and me. Think about it. Nationalism, warmongering, we've seen it all before, we're seeing it again. Don't get sucked in by it. Let's move on. Now, there's going to be a lot of serious things and a lot of humorous things. And what I'm going to try to do, most likely unsuccessfully, but what I'm going to try to do is bring the week's news to you in a format that you won't see or hear anywhere else. Now, I have noticed, and I'm sure you've noticed, that 7 Australians were on the flotilla which attempted to, you know, break the naval blockade of Gaza. And I'm sure you've seen all the little pickies, you know, people being arrested and taken away and then deported, okay? And our government says, oh, ho-hum, well, that's the way it is, isn't it? Now, look, I hate to state the obvious, and I keep stating that facts don't matter because it's the end of the first quarter of the 21st century. We've gone back to the good old dark ages where facts are irrelevant. Maybe we could start burning witches. So, okay. Now, the first thing is these people were kidnapped. They were kidnapped in international waters by the Israeli state. Very few people use the word kidnap. Obviously, the activists involved use the word kidnapped. Now, let's look at this in a different way. Let's say you and I had joined a flotilla that was going to Hong Kong, right? To liberate the people of Hong Kong from the evils of the Chinese Communist Party, okay? Now, if we had been kidnapped by the Chinese government in international waters, I could imagine the hue and cry among Australian politicians, amongst the media in this country, about the fact that we were kidnapped by the Chinese government. And I could imagine the Australian government would be pulling out all stops to have us deported back to Australia. So why didn't we see the same response when the Israeli government kidnapped these activists from international waters? We're told constantly, and we send Australian warships, you know, to the edge of China and to the edge of North Korea to protect people's right, or sovereign states' right, to navigate in international waters. That's what all the dispute about the South China Seas is. And Australia sent warships there to ensure they can actually exercise that right to navigate in international waters. But when it comes to the Israeli state kidnapping Australian citizens from international waters, no hue and cry. All right, let's move on. I mean, you may think it's... all I'm trying to do is just highlight the idiocy of it all. Now, I noticed that the Prime Minister of this country, Mr. Albanese, used the word abhorrent to describe a graffiti in Fitzroy, Melbourne, regarding Hamas. I think it said glory to Hamas, not far from this particular radio station, a few kilometres away. And I'm thinking, really? It's inappropriate. I agree it's inappropriate and it's stupid. Because all it does, it gives the Australian government and the Australian media the chance to, you know, promote their pro-Israeli garbage. I mean, whoever did it, you know, didn't really think about the consequences. But abhorrent, and I'm thinking, abhorrent. All right, let's look at the word abhorrent. Obviously, it's abhorrent that on the 7th of October 2023... over 1,200 people in Israel were killed. Now, you've got to remember that over almost 25% of those that were killed in that rampage were Israeli police or soldiers. That doesn't excuse it, but we hardly ever hear about that, do we? And many of the other people that were killed or murdered were non-Israeli citizens, but that's a different matter. Now, that is abhorrent. But isn't it abhorrent what we've seen since? The murder of 20,000 Gazan children. The total demolition of an area half the size of Melbourne, which is the home of over 2 million people. The direct deaths, not indirect, because for every direct death, there are many indirect deaths. The direct deaths of over 67,000 Gazans. The bombing of hospitals. The execution of reporters. You know? The murder of people trying to access food. The total destruction and humiliation of a people. Now, that's abhorrent to me.
piece of graffiti, it's not abhorrent. It's a piece of graffiti. That's all it is. What is abhorrent is the loss of human life. Well, what's more abhorrent is the fact that everybody seems to think that Palestinian-Israeli history began on the 7th of October 2023. See, this is the great thing about the amnesia, the collective amnesia we all suffer from. It's not our fault. If we've got people, you know, putting out the same misinformation and disinformation on a daily basis, obviously people who are going out their lives get influenced by that information. As Goebbels said, the bigger the lie, the more often you tell it, you know, the more it's going to stick in the public mind. Well, that's not his exact words, but, you know, similar words. You see, first of all, I'd like to say the 7th of October 2023 was a total failure of the Israeli state to protect its citizens. We've been told for decades that Mossad, the Israeli Secret Service, is the best secret service in the world. How could it be that on the 7th of October, thousands of armed Palestinians were able to break out of the world's biggest prison, Gaza, and do what they did? What was Mossad doing? Having drinks at the pub? And then we're told, you know, what was it doing? How can people, Palestinians in an enclave half the size of Melbourne, plan, carry out such a destructive raid into Israel without the Israeli government not being in a position to protect its citizens? So the 7th of October is a total failure of the Israeli state. The next thing I'd like to say is obviously history in Palestine and Israel didn't begin on the 7th of October. But most of the media reporting, most of the comments which are made by, you know, the people in the know, politicians, so-called experts, talk as if it began on the 7th of October 2023. I think this is the fourth fourth bout of resistance from the people of Gaza. Gaza, for at least the last 20 years, has been nothing more than the world's biggest prison. Now, obviously, people living in that particular type of situation are going to support elements within that society which promise that they'll be able to break out of that prison. Another thing I'd like to mention, which nobody seems to mention, is the Holocaust was not the fault of the Palestinian people. We like to think it is, but it wasn't. The Holocaust was created and engineered by a culture of anti-Semitism which goes right back to the crucifixion of Jesus Christ. And the fact that that was the basis for many centuries for anti-Semitism in the West. And it wasn't the Palestinian people that murdered 6 million Jews, 1.5 million Romani and disabled people, and people with intellectual disabilities, and political prisoners, and prisoners of war. It was the West. It was the German state, supported around the world by people who still believed in this little myth. So why are the people of Gaza now paying the ultimate price for that devastation during World War II and the continuing anti-Semitism, which is such an ingrained feature of many societies around the world. It's a little bit like, let's say, you're sitting at home, you know, if your kids and, you know, you're watching the football. We've had the AFL Grand Final and we've had, what, the NRL Grand Final, men and women, or just, the AFL didn't have any women's Grand Final yet. You know, you're watching the Grand Final, you know, and a neighbour storms in wielding a submachine gun and says, "You bastards, you're all responsible." And I said, what? "You killed my family." I said, no, I was thousands of miles away. Nah. You know, I know it sounds ridiculous, but it's the same type of ridiculous, historical, you know, perspective. So here we have now the Palestinian people, both in Gaza and the West Bank, or what's left of Gaza and the West Bank, paying the full price for centuries of European anti-Semitism, which ended in the Holocaust, which was supported by millions of people around the world. And now they have to pay the price for our failures as a people? Extraordinary. Just extraordinary. That, to me, that is abhorrent. How about the history of the Palestinian people being displaced from lands they had occupied for thousands of years? Now, I like to make this analogy, all right? Australia's First Nations people are, you know, pretty pissed off with what's happened to the survivors. And I can understand, you know, why they're pissed off. Totally pissed off. We now form, 95% of the population? If all of a sudden we were all asked to piss off, because they were the original inhabitants, we would be livid. Look at the Palestinian people. The creation of the Israeli state was not about creating a homeland for Jewish people. The creation of the Israeli state was about creating a sovereign entity with a particular philosophy which was based on division, apartheid. That's what it was about. So, look, I could go on forever and ever about this, but the thing is, think about it. History does not begin when we wake up. Whether we're aware of that, of our historical background or not, it has a significant impact on who we are, what we believe in, how we act. And if we refuse to acknowledge the past, things repeat themselves. So, we adore a war criminal. We adore a pariah state. Now, obviously, this is something that you would not have believed could occur at the end of the first quarter of the 21st century, but it is occurring. It is no different to the Biafran conflict in the 1960s, or what happened in the Congo, what's happening in the Democratic Republic of the Congo today, or in Myanmar. What we see is powerful entities using the monopoly on force which they have to impose their will on everybody else. So I suggest you look at the history of Palestine. Look at the history of the Israeli state. See how it was created. Information's out there. You can find it. You're listening to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. My name is Joseph Toscano. Let's move on, something a little bit more topical. Well, not more topical, but more, you know, that's something we can do something about. Now, you are invited to stand with the Peter Norman Commemoration Committee on Thursday, the 9th of October, to recognise the actions which were taken by Mr. Peter Norman, the Tokyo gold medalist, the Australian Tokyo gold medalist in 1968 for universal human rights. Now, we'll be holding a short ceremony, about an hour, from midday to 1 p.m, starting at noon on Thursday the 9th of October at the Lakeside Stadium at the site of the recently installed Peter Norman statue. And that's at 33 Augustie Drive, Albert Park in Melbourne. So why? Why are we bothering? What's it all about? Well, I'll go through this again. Peter Norman featured in one of the most recognised pivotal moments in 20th century Australian history. You can't say that about many Australians. Now, in 1968, remember, Los Angeles is burning, Detroit's burning. Black athletes in the United States track and field team, they toyed with the idea of boycotting the Mexico Olympics to protest about the lack of human rights in the United States of America for Afro-Americans and for many other Americans. So instead of boycotting the 1968 Olympics, they formed the Olympic Project for Human Rights. It was an organisation that was open to all United States Olympians, irrespective of colour, race, religion. So remember, the 1968 was a pivotal moment. Things were changing around the world. Remember, this is the year Bobby Kennedy and Martin Luther King were assassinated, the year the Soviet Union invaded Czechoslovakia, and the massive student riots across Europe, especially in France in 1968. So the world was changing. On the eve of the Olympic medal presentation, Tommy Smith, the gold medalist, and John Carlos, the bronze medalist, both Afro-Americans, asked Peter Norman two questions. Do you believe in human rights? Do you believe in God? Well, he told them he did. The Americans told him about their plans, to which Peter Norman replied, I will stand with you. I will stand with you. And that's the key. Mr. Norman decided before the medal presentation that he would stand with Tommy Smith and John Carlos when they made their human rights salute. Right. He wore an Olympic Project for Human Rights medal, and the protest went ahead. Obviously, Smith and Carlos were shanghaied back to the United States of America. They were stripped of their medal, and then they were punished for decades for what they did. But what people seem to forget is Peter Norman suffered the same fate when he came back to Australia. I mean, I'm not going to go for all the humiliations he was personally put through, but I'd just like to remind you that we're all now jumping up and down about the 25th anniversary of the Sydney Olympics, the world's most successful Olympics. Well, you may find this hard to believe, that Peter Norman was not invited to the Sydney Games. He did a little bit of publicity pre, but not invited to the Sydney Games. When the American Track and Field Association said, where's our mate Peter Norman? They said, oh, who's he? And they invited him to live with them in the Olympic Village because of the actions he took were held in such high regard. So, on the day of his funeral, which was on the 9th of October 2006, they declared the 9th of October Peter Norman Day, a day that is celebrated in the United States of America and ignored in this country. Now, we invite you to come with us. Stand with us. Stand with us. I will stand with you. Because that is the essence of all struggle, whether it's the struggle regarding Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander rights, whether it's the struggle regarding gender rights, whether it's a struggle regarding Palestinian rights. It's about we, us, you and me, standing with them. It's very easy to turn your back. It's very easy to walk away. There are always consequences when you make that decision to stand with them. Now, interestingly, in the United States of America, I've forgotten exactly what state. There's a statue to this momentous occasion. And on one dais is a statue of Tommy Smith, the Olympic gold medalist. On the other dais is a statue of John Carlos, the bronze medalist. And in the middle, where Peter Norman should be, there is nobody. That's your place. That's our place. Unless we stand with people, sections of society which are ignored, marginalised, criminalised, humiliated, nothing will ever change. So come and join us on Peter Norman Day and stand with the struggle to create a more egalitarian community. You listen to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia via the Community Radio Network. Now, people ask me, oh, you know, what can I do? Well, there's a few things you can do. Obviously, you can look around your neck of the woods and sort out what's going on, and maybe you can join something that's going on. But if you want to join public interest before corporate interests, you're welcome to do so. Just go to pibci.net, P-I-B-C-I.net. You can join online. Become a member of public interest before corporate interests. They say, well, what can I look at? And I say, well, you know, you can read. Well, I've got, there's two YouTube channels. You like that? YouTube channels. That's a tongue twister, YouTube channels. There's public interest before corporate interests. There's about 350 YouTube presentations I've done over the years regarding specific issues. And there's another historical channel, YouTube channel, josephtoscano.nam, which looks at, you know, historic events. You know, there's lots of things you can do. Just go on the net, you'll find out all about it. And if you want to find out more about Peter Norman, if you go to the Peter Norman Commemoration Committee Facebook page, there are many pages on Peter Norman. There's a lot of history. But it's the fact that he was willing to put other people's concerns before his own concerns is the important thing. Let's move on. Now, when is a treaty not a treaty? Now, I was really happy to hear, maybe I'm being facetious here, but I was happy to hear that Australia had finally signed a treaty with Papua New Guinea, a defence treaty. We're up to 10,000 members of the Papua New Guinea Defence Forces, and maybe two or three of the Australian Defence Forces. Good exchange, you know. A treaty to protect ourselves in case we were invaded by that unknown, unnamed enemy out there. So when is a treaty not a treaty? I thought, oh, this is wonderful. We've got a treaty with New Zealand, obviously. We've got a treaty with the United States of America where we're treated like shit. And I'm not going to particularly go into that treaty where, you know, they can switch a button and turn off the weapons which they've sold us if we don't do the right thing by them. And now we've got a treaty with the Papua New Guinea government. And I thought, oh, the third treaty we've entered in the last 75 years since the end of World War II, which I think ended about 80 years ago. So when is a treaty not a treaty? Well, the Papua New Guinea government said, well, we really haven't made up our mind whether we will come to your defence if you're involved in a dispute with China. You know, well, think about it. And then the Australian government said, oh, no, we would never put troops on the West Papua New Guinea border
And if the Indonesian government, you know, wanted to expand its little empire into Papua New Guinea, well, you know, we don't really think that's how part of the treaty process. I'm thinking to myself, what's the point of having a treaty when both nations are not willing to come to the defence of the other nation, irrespective of who the enemy is at that particular point in time? So it seems that, you know, it's a little bit like good guys and bad guys, good nuclear bombs and bad nuclear bombs, good war criminals and bad war criminals. We have good treaties and bad treaties, and we just basically sign a piece of paper and hope at the end of the day that somehow it's going to protect us. From whom? Well, we'll find out. So, when is a treaty not a treaty? Maybe when the parameters are not spelled out properly. Let's move on. Now, speaking about Indonesia and West Papua, now the West Papuan Rent Collective, which I'm convener of, will be having their final 2025 gathering on Sunday, the 16th of November, starting at 1 p.m. Now, obviously, I'm letting you know ahead of time. Gives you plenty of time to save your pennies to either join the West Papuan Rent Collective or to buy some lovely West Papuan end of the year prezzies for your family and friends. Why go to some $2 shop, or why go to some corporate temple of consumption to buy plastic shit for your kiddies and grandkiddies and your uncles and aunts and families and friends when you can come to the West Papuan Rent Collective gathering at 838 Collins Street in Docklands? Just walk around to the back and have a beautiful West Papuan meal. Listen to an updated version of what's happening regarding the West Papuan independence struggle. And participate in the auction and getting yourself a bargain from West Papua. Well, it's up to you. You've got choices. You can buy cheap plastic garbage from exploited workers from, you know, some temple of consumption, or you can actually get something for the people you admire and love made by West Papuans at the West Papuan Rent Collective auction on Sunday the 16th of November. So put that in your diary. Now, occasionally I have the misfortune of listening to some of our dear leaders. Now, I'm not talking about the dear leader in North Korea. They call him the dear leader. I'm talking about our dear leaders, our political leaders, not our real leaders. I mean, why would our real leaders talk to scum like you and me? I mean, all we want to do is saw that leg off the corporate table to ensure that everybody enjoys the fruits of this land, not just a insignificant shrinking minority. Now, here I was, you know, stretching out, and I heard the Victorian Premier, actually saw her on TV, you know, television, free to air, saying that they were pulling all the housing levers. I'm thinking, does this person really know what she's saying? The Victorian Premier pulling all the housing levers? Currently, there's an increasing number of people in the public housing sector and public housing activists who are gaining a little bit of traction by stating that what the Victorian government is doing is nothing more than privatising what's left of the public housing sector through neglect and through grandiose plans which will see public housing replaced by a majority of private housing, a little bit of social affordable community housing, which is speak for private housing run by associations, some for profit, some not for profit. Now,
Victorian Premier. Now, I'm sick of talking about this because it's amazing. It's a little bit like the Prime Minister seeing a big piece of graffiti describing it as abhorrent. And it's a little bit like us, you know, kind of shrugging our shoulders when it came to Australian citizens who were kidnapped from international waters. It's the same type of hypocrisy which this country seems to be built on. You know, here we are, pulling all the housing levers. Look, if you want to ensure that the housing crisis is overcome, all you need to do is stop digging holes in the bloody ground and actually putting money into public housing, to build and manage public housing. If the money which was collected from the sales tax, which is imposed by the Victorian State Government every time you buy a home, which is up to $8 billion, possibly $10 billion a year, instead of throwing it down a bloody empty hole, you know, trying to build this huge, you know, train network, if you put it into public housing, you could house 100,000 Victorians every year. You could have a quarter of the population in public housing within 25 years. And what's the beauty of public housing? Secure housing for 25% of income. You don't have to build mega metropolises. You can spot purchase in the community as investors flee from the lower end of the marketplace, as the number of public homes increase and their ability to rent their little hovels at outrageous prices decrease. And they're quite happy to leave the market if they find themselves in that situation. So, Premier, please think before you open your mouth. Pulling all the housing levers does not mean not pulling the public housing lever. You're listening to The Anarchist World this week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. As I said, it's a comic program. It really isn't, is it? But when you think about it. Now, we know that the current government, not the opposition, whoever they are, can't even remember who they are, but the current government is very keen on promoting Australian manufacturing, all right? Not public manufacturing, but private manufacturing. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. They want to promote Australian manufacturing, okay? Now, I want to tell you a little story which you may find very difficult to believe, and this story has been bubbling along for over a decade. Over a decade. And it's an East Coast versus West Coast story. Now, you may not know this, but Australia is the second largest exporter of gas in the world. I think Qatar is the first, the largest exporter of natural gas in the world. Now, the West Australian government, in its wisdom, ensured that gas supplies were reserved for local manufacturing. So people in the West, manufacturers in the West Coast of Australia, in West Australia, have no problems accessing cheap gas, which is required currently for manufacturing. Obviously, with the transition to renewable energy, that amount of gas will gradually decrease. No problem. Now, the East Coast of Australia, which I think is must be another country, on the East Coast of Australia, the federal government, in its wisdom, not this current government, but previous governments, in their wisdom, both Labor and Coalition, organised a deal to beat all deals. It's a little bit like the Tasmanian ferry deal. I was down in Tasmania on the weekend for a meeting or two. But, you know, down at Devonport, they've got a brand new ferry in Hobart, or somewhere in Tasmania. They can't dock it
in Devonport because nobody thought about measuring the port in comparison to the size of the ferry. Funny story, real, it's causing real ruckus in Tasmania. But getting back to what I'm talking about, gas supply. So no gas has been reserved by successive Australian governments for local manufacturing. So over the last 10 years, gas costs for local manufacturing on the east coast of Australia, which is where most manufacturing occurs, has tripled. And the gas companies are refusing, obviously, because they're making hay and not paying tax at the same time, are refusing to provide enough gas. Now, this is a question that should be resolved by a government that has an extraordinary majority. But no, it continues to bubble on. So all their garbage about Australian, by Australian made and supporting Australian manufacturing is just that. Because without a reliable, cost-efficient energy source in the interim before renewable energy takes over, well, then what you're going to see is more and more Australian manufacturing, especially on the East Coast, especially small business manufacturing, collapsing because of a lack of a government initiative. You've been listening to The Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia via the Community Radio Network. This program has been streaming live on 3cr.org.au. That's 3cr.org.au. My name's Joseph Toscano. The program is podcast. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. You can leave pleasant messages on 0439 395 489. I usually delete unpleasant messages. 0439 395 489. You can actually write to me. I know it's unbelievable that people still write letters, but people do. And send them to Post Office Box 20, Parkville 3052. Don't forget to join us on Peter Norman Day. I will stand with you. Thursday, the 9th of October, midday at the Lakeside Oval in Melbourne. Go to the Peter Norman Facebook, Peter Norman Commemoration Committee Facebook page. Don't forget, if you're in Melbourne tonight, we're having dinner at Naruda's at the corner of Breeze, B-R-E-E-Z-E Street and Albion Street in Brunswick, starting at 6:30 p.m. You're more than welcome to come. The more, the merrier. Don't forget, you can always join public interest before corporate interest and a group of people that wants to put the future of the many before the future of the few, which seems to be the mantra these days, the few before the many. That's what the public is. It's about the many. You can do that by going to pibci.net, P-I-B-C-I.net. And before you sign up, have a look at the website. I'm actually the secretary for public interest before corporate interest, and I encourage you to join. Thank you for listening to The Anarchist World This Week on your local community station, courtesy of those magnificent people at the Community Radio Network. I'd like to thank Daryl, the producer, and please listen in next week to The Anarchist World This Week. Daryl will be podcasting the program in the next few days. You can access the podcast by going to 3cr.org.au. That's 3cr.org.au. Listen in to The Anarchist World This Week, next week on your local community radio station.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.